everybody. This is podcast number 7 of the Lunch Talks podcast. We are doing the lightning round again, where I ask 3 questions to Matthew, and Matthew asks 3 questions to me, and we give short answers. So here we go, Matthew. Or this time we're just going to ask to do some main ideas and speak on what you think of those main ideas. Matthew, what do you think about cultural apathy?
Cultural apathy. So right with what I was on last time. I think the problem with cultural apathy, or not the problem with that, that being the problem with our society, really just comes from the fact that people aren't motivated anymore, you know? And this is kind of something where I stand in my political debate, is that there is such validity to the notion of the conservative side of saying you have to motivate people, you know, to go and get something for their, you know, for themselves. That's a big stance, and I support that. You know, I don't think that our society can be, you know, run just by giving people things, because no one's going to have any motivation to run up. The problem I have with that, because I'm a big supporter of you only have your rights so far as they're not impeding on other people's rights, I don't like, and I've never liked the situation where you say, all right, we're going to have 10 people and only 2 can make it. You know, it's like, well, you know, yeah, it'd be nice to be one of those 2, but, and I've been there before, it sucks to be one of those other 8, you know, and I don't like being one of those other 8. What are you going to do from there? If that is, if life was like, all right, we're going to have 10 people, only 2 people can make it, and the other 8, this is your only chance, and if you fail, go figure it out. What are they going to do? If you just say, well, work harder. We can't. We've already had our chance. We've already gone through quote-unquote school, and we've already tried to get into the job sector, and now we're living at our parents' house in slummy neighborhoods where, you know, we don't have any, like you said before, class mobility or ability to go anywhere. It's like, what am I supposed to do? You know, yeah, I'd like to work hard, but when I go somewhere and I apply for a job and then I see another guy come in and he's white and he gets the job, what am I supposed to do? You know, but that's the problem, I think, with apathy, is that you get a notion from one side saying you have to just motivate people to work hard. But I think the conduit or the actual, like, you know, process that people are taking to try and motivate people is the wrong way, just by telling them to, you know, work harder. And so I guess really my solution to cultural apathy is find your motivation. And that's what Ty Lopez had said. He said, if you want to stop procrastinating, you have to find your motivation. And it's that simple. If you can't, then what are you going to do, you know, with your life? And I guess, you know, my snippet of advice is find your motivation and bring some people with you, you know, say, hey, you know, this is my motivation. Hopefully that's your motivation too. Cause I can't think that I'm the only person who uses never stop learning as my motivation. I've heard Ty Lopez say it before.
Yeah.
You know, so other people are using that. So if I can, if you will, you know, just touch somebody else with that, then, you know, I think that's a way you could fix apathy. And going on that idea of you can't just tell someone to work harder to get them to work harder, it reminds me of the only quote I have in here from Ryan. And it said, there's nothing fun about someone telling you to have fun.
Absolutely.
I mean, really, like someone telling you to do something, you can't then do it. That makes it inherently more difficult to do it just by someone telling you to do it, you know? And so... I think that's a point where we have to get, is where we are motivating people, you know, to do something that the system doesn't allow them to do. So go ahead and do your second and third questions, and then I'll just run down all of mine.
Okay. Second question is, what do you think about the media and TV?
Media and TV. I don't watch a lot of TV, and it's one because I would rather, you know, attain my news and stuff like that from my computer and the stuff that I look up and whatever, and then my phone too. Just because someone, again, it kind of goes with that idea, someone telling you how things are is a lot more difficult to look into than this. You know, if I'm reading an article and it says, and then this person did this, I can instantly stop what I'm doing, go over, go into a new tab and search, and I can fact check it myself. And if it's wrong, I can just stop learning, you know, that. See what I'm saying? And otherwise, if you're watching, you know, MSNBC or CNN or anything, you know, and they're just saying this stuff, you know, well, and then you go to fact check it, and then they're already onto a new segment, but you've already heard their conclusion to that. You know, people are trying to make conclusions, you know, and connections, and that's where my desire to become a teacher, you know, I strongly believe in presenting a problem before you present a solution. School right now is a solution. But to what?
Yeah.
I mean, really and honestly, why do you go to school?
Okay, I go to school so I can go to college, so then I can get a job, so then they can prep me for filling another quota, so once I meet that quota, I get another quota, and then by the end of it, I realize I've been tricked the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. What's the goal?
Yeah, I mean, there really, is no goal.
You know, my idea is if you present a problem of being, well, it's better to be educated than it is to be uneducated because, one, you have a good idea of society, and two, you have a more, if you will, hypercritical, you know, view on society, not criticizing people, but criticizing thoughts. You know, like you said, it's mind opening when you challenge something, even your own beliefs. Yeah. You know, I have to face that because I get hypocritical when I believe that I've figured out the solution. Going back to Voltaire's quote, you know, reject the man who claims to have found the truth, you know, and follow the man who seeks it, or something very similar to that, you know, and I have to check myself, and I have to say, all right, accept that this idea that is presented to me is not wrong, and mine is right, accept it as valid, as viable, and look into it, you know, and it allows me to say, let me look and try and understand what that person is thinking, you know, because to believe something, you have to have made the connection in your mind. Yeah. Or you have to have been told what the connection is, you know, which is a lot of people. But, you know, I want to figure out, and what that is, it's empathy. You know, that's a huge thing that is a big lack in our society is this feeling of empathy. You know, that people either, one, don't understand the feelings of other people, or two, don't understand where someone is coming from. Yeah. And I've been, I think, pretty good at demonstrating where I'm coming from, because I believe in a very logical system. I don't like taking things for granted, and I don't like taking ideas as this is fact. There has to be a logical reason for things to be the way that they are. And so that's why everything that I believe goes under or through that filter system. And then it's like, all right, this is the basis that I've used to come to this conclusion. So all in all, media and TV, take in as many resources as you can, because that means you're trying to get as many different viewpoints as you can, and then come to your own conclusion. You know, if you had a group of 10 people and you're trying to decide where you're going to go to eat dinner for that group of 10 people, would you say, "Hey Jim," just to one person, "Hey Jim, where do you want to go eat?" And he says, "Well, I want to go to McDonald's." McDonald's it is. How does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know. You don't know what anyone else is thinking, is feeling, would like. I mean, someone may be a vegetarian, and then going to McDonald's really hinders their ability to, you know, eat something that they would like. I mean, you don't want to just go with that. You want to say, all right, well, what do all of you want? Come to pretty much a majority. Say, all right, well, that seems reasonable. This guy isn't too offended by going here. Let's go to Wendy's. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying McDonald's or Wendy's is better, but, you know, just a thought. So, last question.
Question number 3. What do you think of America's role in the world? What do you think it is?
America's role in the world. Well, increasingly, I have become more aware of our power, you know, that we have, or that we can have, and that we have had. And I think where we have to be is a point where it's kind of like on a basketball team, if you will. But that's not a good example because you can kind of be dominated. Let's say a football team. You know, there is a whole group of 11 people who make up the offense. It doesn't matter how good of a quarterback you are. If you don't have another 10 people who are good, you're going to suck. You know, it doesn't matter how many catches you can do one-handed. That doesn't matter if you don't have a quarterback that can throw it to you. You have to have each person who's equally powerful doing their job. And I don't think America so much has a job, but I think we need to come into society, if you will, the global society, and say, we're here, we have X, Y, and Z, we can do M, N, and L, L, M, and N. We can do, you know, these three things, we have all of these things. Tell us what you need, you know, to have done. Rather than coming in and say, no, you can't do that. I'm going to show you how to do it. I don't like being a world police. I like being a world power that can be a conduit to peace.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's where we have to stand is what can we do to, you know, and I get that ISIS probably can't be taken with love and compassion, even though that's what I'd like to believe, you know, that anything can be solved with love and compassion. But, you know, the thought that I've had, which would be kind of funny, is if you had all 7 billion, you know, people in the world, so there's 7.5 billion, and if you had all of the ISIS people in one little sector, and then you had 7 billion people just circling in on them, not in any kind of violent way, but in a totally, you know, kill me, yes, go ahead and kill me. I'm willing to die because I would rather peace. How long would it take for them to concede?
That's what Gandhi thought.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly his way of thinking.
Yeah. So I like to think that, you know, and so I think if there's a way that we can get people to work together, you know, I've heard a lot of times that ISIL will not be, you know, destroyed by a Western civilization. It will have to be destroyed by a Muslim civilization. So I think if we can get the Muslim world to work together and say, this is, you know, we agree that these are principles that we can set in our society, and we agree that these are the things that we want for, you know, our people's lives, let's do this. So, all right, so that's your three topics. Third world countries, anything about them, what do we do, you know, what do we do about them?
Well, as you guys saw, listeners, if you heard, I think podcast number 4, and you saw this, the Welcome to Democracy idea, so there's a video by Key and Peele, I'll go by it really quick. There's these African people, and they're walking in a village, and there's like this guy in a suit, and they're like, hey, we need your help. Our village is being plundered. There's rapes, killings, all kinds of terrible things. And he's like, oh, that's terrible. How bad? Like, please, need your help. And he's like, we support you ideologically. And then the guy goes, but wait, we have beautiful new oiled fields that need your protection. And then all of a sudden, the guy stops dead in the road. They're walking along the road. And he just stops and he pulls out a phone and he goes, Operation Eagle is a go. And all of a sudden, you look up and there's like a bunch of planes flying over, and they're like, oh my gosh. Well, in the same way, America personally offers hope and injects itself into societies that can benefit from it. It's almost like it's an extractor, like it's going up to a water source and taking all the water out and then leaving everything else there to die, like all the fish in the pond to die. And if you look at the way Africa was divided up by the Europeans a long time ago, when they just divided up sectors and said this is going to be Belgium's area or France's area or Britain's area, that created a great deal of problems because they're extracting all the natural resources out of certain areas of Africa and using all of that wealth for themselves when you could actually put it back in Africa and it could greatly help. I was listening to a guy named Jack Lane. He was a health guy a long time ago. And he was talking about how he was in a third world country and he was on this bus. And all of a sudden, on the bus, it was really bad. Everybody didn't have like good clothes and everything. Very poor area, and all of a sudden, a lady started singing, and the whole bus broke out in song, and they're all singing this stuff. And Jack LaLanne said, he was talking about in this video. Wait a minute. So these people in a third world country, they're starving, they're broke, they're poor, and in our eyes, they're living a destitute life, but they're happy and they're singing. And you go into like the transportation mode of any city, and you look around, and everybody's all like miserable. So where can we find our happiness from? Is it from material things, or is it from, material things can be awesome, but is it truly from that, or is it from love and connection and being with people who you like and all of these things? So I think, you know, poverty, is it, we may be in a first world country, but how much poverty of the heart is there? And I'm not all like, oh, poverty of the heart, like a religious or like, you know, I mean, like, how much poverty is it in the lives of the personal lives of the people, even though they may have a nice house, mm-hmm. they may have the biggest house in the world, but inside they're empty, you know?
Yeah, I'd like to see if they had like a poverty chart or scale or number, where instead of setting the poverty line at around $10,000 for a single person household, where if they changed it to poverty, was anyone who felt happy for only 10% of a day?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or less. How would that change?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And obviously it's a much harder thing to calculate, but I think that would be kind of interesting. Goes with what you're saying. Next thing, climate change.
Climate change. Okay, so 97% of climate scientists agree that climate change has been affected by human actions. So one dichotomy I saw, and I wrote about this in a paper that I wrote for religion class, was I personally know a lot of Catholic people in southern Louisiana who completely go against the idea, like they reject the idea of climate change. Okay, so in Catholicism we've been taught, because you and I have both gone to a Catholic school for our viewers to know, we were taught in the past that Catholics are supposed to be stewards of the earth, people who care for creation and life and things like that. Also, in 2100, by the year 2100, most of Southeast Louisiana could be underwater. So people who are going against it could actually have their children potentially die. And I see climate change as almost lactase operon. Is that
lactoperon?
Lactoperon. For people who don't know, it's like a biological function where if there's enough lactase in the environment, it will release an enzyme called lactase and get rid of the lactose. Mm-hmm. I see that almost as like humans. Like we're here and we're like, we're getting more and more populated, more and more populated. All of a sudden the earth's like, all right, let's get rid of the hum, like the HUM operon. Let's bring up the water, and 100 million people live near the water. They're all going to mm-hmm. die. And anyway, like Southeast Louisiana, I think it holds like 90% of the nation's oil refineries. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of funny, because that's where the oil that's causing the problems is also in the area that's going to get knocked out. Also in Beijing. So they have a scale from like 0 to 5, and I think it's like particles per million, and of like dust, particulate in the air, and all these kinds of things. I believe it's at 200. So
on a scale from 0 to 5.
A scale from 0 to 500.
Oh, okay.
No, not Beijing's not at 200.
Okay.
The scale of 200 mm-hmm. says once ppm hits 200, mm-hmm. don't take your children outside it. Don't play outside it. Don't go to school. You know, all these things. Beijing is off literally, not figuratively. It rates on a 700 on a scale of 0 to 500. There was a guy who walked through the city for like 3 months holding a vacuum cleaner in the air, and then afterwards he had a brick. Like he made this own brick of something that he took out of the air.
Man.
So if you see pictures of Beijing, go Google image it. It's ridiculous.
That's not cyclic. The earth does not go into a cycle where smog fills our atmosphere. You know, that's a huge notion that it's a cyclic process. Now, global warming can be looked upon as possibly cyclic, but the smog, that the earth isn't like, oh, it's time to put smog into the, like, that doesn't exist, you know, until we did that.
Yeah.
And it's still your question. Anything else on climate change?
Yes, and I'm sorry for taking up so much time on this, but you could argue that volcanoes would be the natural thing of smog, but the thing is, when the volcanoes release all that, it does cause problems, but it's also a wonderful fertilizer. Mm-hmm. And from the death that the volcano comes out, life comes, and it's a wonderful place for plants to grow. So on the planet, you see, you know, this wonderful process of death and life, death and life, death and life. On the planet, humans are acting, you know, go, 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 grow, grow, grow. Let's get more money. Let's keep on the show. I don't know. I wanted to rhyme that. But it's always like we have to have this economic line going up. You know, we've learned that in economics and accounting. You know, you always want to have that line going up. Where is this natural sine wave that happens in life? Mm-hmm. And eventually there's going to be a crash. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a crash where we exhaust things to the point where we can't go any farther. There's going to be a point of no return. And almost like you can see the state of people. Like a lot of people have adrenal fatigue, chronic exhaustion, things like this because their health reflects the state of the earth. Let's see. One more thing. Let's see. So I had... water, Beijing. Oh yeah, the taboo around the environment. So if I bring up the environment in a social situation, all of a sudden I become a hippie tree hugger who wants to frolic around in fields of flowers and sing happy fun songs. This is a serious problem where a lot of people could die. The mm-hmm. you know, certain areas could be destroyed, and this taboo around it stops people from being able to come up and do something about it because they're worried, okay, if I look at this, all of a sudden I'll be rejected by my social group. Mm-hmm. So if we can take down the taboo around this very important subject, maybe we can have some movement in this.
Mm-hmm. And one thing, and I don't mean to take this as my question, but and as you were saying, more people live in coastal counties than in, you know, inner counties in the continental United States.
Yeah.
And I guess I can go for Hawaii and Alaska as well. You know, and that's really crazy. Counties, not states, but coastal counties. Well, you know, so I mean, the majority of people could in America have to move out of their cities if water levels were to rise. And another thing too, even if someone was so determined, if you will, that global warming is just cyclic, you know, and they weren't going to accept at all that that our you know, involvement in the Earth's history is what is causing this. One huge major thing that releasing carbon dioxide specifically into the air, and then of course you have things like methane and water vapor that scientists are, you know, also using as particles or molecules that are affecting climate change. But carbon dioxide specifically, when it comes in contact with water, forms carbonic acid in the water and thus makes the pH much lower. And that's why when you have water and you put some phenolphthalein in it, and it's a, if you, it, indicator of a base. And so if you put that in and just a couple drops of, you know, something like sodium hydroxide, it's going to be pink. And if you stick a straw in it and you blow out, because we all know that we exhale carbon dioxide, if you blow into that water, it will go completely, you know, back to clear. And that's because forming that carbonic acid equalizes the pH and now you're back to normal. So that comes to the marine life. And the oceans, being the life center that they are, temperature, the even oil reserves, because I believe it's in the 90s percentile of our oil reserves are coming from microbiotic life from the sea. You know, it's not, a lot of people like to think we're burning off the dinosaurs. We're not. It's honestly mostly microbes that have died, all accumulated, and then that's our oil.
Yeah.
So if you like oil, if you like having a livable Earth, because of temperatures due to the seas, if you like having, you know, marine life and nice, you know, blue water and having fish and things like that to eat, having that diverse meal, I would suggest not exhaling, not that you can stop that, but reducing your carbon emissions, you know, with your cars and stuff like that, because the average, or what full strength ocean water should be, is around a pH of 8. Its highest point that it's gotten is around 8.5. That was a few hundred years ago, a few thousand years ago. It's not that important, the date. The important part is that now the global average pH has concurrently dropped as carbon dioxide emissions have risen and has gotten to where now we're at an average pH of around 7.6. And so if within the last couple of hundred years, we have, and really just the last hundred years, if our pH has dropped a couple of, you know, tenths of a pH down to almost as you know, equal in pH as normal water, normal distilled water, that means our, you know, effect on the earth via the oceans could be drastic. You know, so not from the fact that we're warming the earth by atmosphere, even though we are, but if you're not willing to believe that, the simple presence of carbon dioxide, and the other thing, it's not like there's a maximum amount of water or a maximum amount of carbon dioxide that water can take. I mean, if you put in more carbon dioxide, it will get more acidic. And you can get to the full strength carbonic acid to the point where we're in the, you know, I don't know what it is, but probably 5 or 4 pH, which would then kill everything in the ocean. We'd lose any oil reserves. Temperatures around the earth would skyrocket and then plummet. I mean, huge astronomically problematic things that aren't just caused by particles in the air that are warming the earth, but literally the ocean being, you know, just destroyed. So that is another argument that you can use with climate change. You know, that isn't just, oh, well, it snowed, you know, like the video, yeah. You know, scientists think they're so smart. They say it was the hottest year on record, but it snowed.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not the point. You know, look at the El Nino. There was a warm spot on the earth that got warmer and it caused great effects. All right. So last one, states' rights versus federal rights, and we're kind of running out of time. If you were to say just pretty much a simple thing on, do you believe in more of the states' rights thing, where if you want a more liberal state, you can vote for a more liberal state, and vice versa with a conservative state, which can lead to possibly a greater disparity between states that are more liberal and more conservative, because if you're liberal in a conservative state, you probably would rather move to a more liberal state, and vice versa. Do you think that that is the best way to do it, and essentially like that subsidiarity that the Catholic Church asserts in saying, let the lowest, you know, denomination of government take care of what it needs to take care of, or do you think that the federal government should do or should have the power to do what it needs to do to impose on states enough, you know, regulation to say, look, I get it, you know, we get states' rights and stuff, but no one in your state or any other state needs an AK-47, something like that.
Okay, the way I see it is that there should be some kind of healthy interaction between the two, basically where the federal government acts as a protector and a provider and a regulator. And so, like, the federal government does wonderful things, like the FDA, they regulate our food, even though there's all kinds of things kind of corrupt that. But anyway, you know, they protect us with an army. And they provide a lot of resources, especially to Mississippi, the most conservative and anti-welfare state, probably receives, like, 50% of its money from the federal government. Not many people know that, and it's kind of like institutional hypocrisy right there. But anyway, I believe the government should its role is to serve the people that work under it. People aren't supposed to be serving it. So we help it by giving our tax money, by being good people, and we give it an influx of money so that they can reinvest that into the people. And I've noticed, I spent some time in South Dakota. In Mississippi, there's like almost no public parks, no public anything. In South Dakota, it's all over the place. You know, public trails, tons of parks, and it's like the idea of like, oh wow, there's a government that's looking out for the people. That's an idea there. Like, I can see that happening physically, and it's like, wow, they're helping us, you know, I can play around in this park and have a good time because they're there. And in Mississippi, that doesn't exist. I don't see a lot of public parks. I don't see a lot of walking trails. And, you know, we have, like, one of the highest rates of obesity in the nation. It's, like, top three or whatever. So, I don't know. I think there should be both systems should work as protectors and providers, but not to the point where the federal government imposes a sort of restriction upon the state government. Like, for example, I think Colorado should be, if they want to smoke weed, they should. And I don't think the federal government should stop them from doing that.
Mm. So kind of like working together.
Yeah.
And I'll say one thing on that, and something that my dad and I were talking about. And, you know, coming from more of the conservative side, he was saying, you know, well, once the money gets into the hands of the politicians, it doesn't show up anywhere else. You know, it's bureaucracy, you know, and stuff like that. And my solution to that, and what I told him blatantly, I said, the solution to that is don't vote for someone who would do that. You know, yeah. And so, audience, take that into consideration. Don't vote for someone who would set up a government that you don't like.
Yeah.
It's that simple. So, that concludes our 7th podcast, which is awesome. It's rolling very well. And go check out our iTunes podcast. I guess I can link that in the YouTube page. I will try to link that in the YouTube page so you can go check it out. Or you can just go into the iTunes app and search Lunch Talks with Matt and Brendan, or just Lunch Talks, whatever. And hopefully you can find it. And hopefully, you know, we can offer as many resources and stuff for people to be able to check it out. So thanks, guys, for listening. This is super awesome, and we will see you next Sunday.